As Fallujah ground on in early April 2004, and the fighting spread to nearby Ramadi, the broad middle of Iraq, from Mosul in the north to Baghdad in the middle to Najaf in the south-central area, began to spin out of control. On April 9, 2004, Bruce Hoffman, a RAND Corporation terrorism expert who had been consulting at the CPA, was leaving the country at the end of a four-week visit. We had three incidents on the way to Baghdad's airport, and then heard a huge explosion while we were there. It was the attack on the convoy that got Thomas Hamel. Hamel was a truck driver taken captive in one of the worst incidents involving contractors of the entire war. A 26-vehicle convoy bringing an emergency shipment of jet fuel from the big U.S. base at Balad to the Baghdad airport was ambushed 5 miles short of its destination. PFC Jeremy Church, a National Guardsman who was a Walmart security guard in civilian life, was driving for the convoy commander, Lieutenant Matt Brown, when he noticed that all the Iraqi cars and trucks on the highway had disappeared, leaving the Americans alone after what had been heavy traffic. A moment later, a fusillade of small arms fire hit the convoy, including a bullet that knocked Brown's helmet from his head. Brown's left eye popped out of its socket, and his brain began to bleed and swell. A bomb blew out a tire in the truck, but Church drove on the bare rim until he came to a base operated by a unit of the 1st Cavalry Division. He then helped organize a relief column to head back into the kill zone to rescue the survivors of the ambushed convoy, an act for which he received the Silver Star. Six drivers had been killed, some by rocket-propelled grenades, others by small arms fire, and others apparently by flames. Huge plumes of black smoke were visible for miles. Two Army soldiers on escort duty were also killed, and one was taken captive. Around this time, Dan Saner, Bremer's spokesman, vowed at a Green Zone press conference, "We will not allow this country to head down the path toward destabilization." But even as he said it, it seemed like that was precisely the course Iraq was on. It was an unusual press conference, conducted in a big, formal meeting room, upholstered with an orange carpet, and featuring a soldier in battle fatigues and body armor, carrying an automatic weapon and surveying the assembled reporters. In addition to Fallujah and Ramadi, the U.S.-led coalition lost any semblance of authority in several other south-central cities, most notably in Najaf and Kut. The ability of armed U.S. forces to operate routinely in much of the rest of central Iraq diminished. The major difference from the previous 9 months or so of fighting was that for the first time, even as the Sunnis were fighting in Fallujah and Ramadi, a Shiite militia was attacking across a broad area. The forces of Muqtadir al-Sadr, a rabble-rousing radical Shiite cleric who strongly opposed the U.S. presence, would take a different approach than the Sunnis, who had been doing the bulk of the fighting for many months. Just 30 years old, Sadr was the son of Grand Ayatollah Muhammad Sadiq Sadr, who had been assassinated along with two of his sons in Najaf in 1999, presumably on the order of Saddam Hussein. Sadr puzzled U.S. officials, who judged him an awkward, unintelligent young man who, they calculated, could be neglected into obscurity. That view tended to underestimate the power that Sadr's populist strain of Shiism derived from nationalist sentiments. Unusually for a Shiite, Sadr's posters tended to feature the Iraqi flag, which also was flown by his followers at demonstrations.